How are we doing, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Rugby Player Podcast. I'm your host, Harry Benno. This episode, I speak with Alev Kelter from the USA Women's Sevens program. Alev's been involved with the team since 2014 and since then has been an integral member of the program ever since, going to the Olympics, World Cups, top of point scoring in a lot of the statistics for the Women's Sevens circuit, and has massive aspirations for the next 12 months with Sevens World Cup and Olympics moving forward. Probably more fascinating about Alev was her pathway into rugby and how she got there, and sort of her background that lended to the skill set that she has in her career at the moment. So awesome to speak to a fellow coffee connoisseur as well. I really hope you appreciate the episode. Thank you. Have I got you?
Yes. How's it going? Can you hear me?
Yeah, perfect. Alev, great to meet you.
Thank you. You too.
How's it all going?
Oh, it's going really well. We're just getting into groups of 10 at training, so a lot more numbers. It's super fun.
Yeah, nice. So you guys all started back up again a couple of weeks ago, but got a week off just then?
Yeah. Yes.
And you went home?
I went to Long Beach, New York to visit my girlfriend's family.
Oh, nice.
They live out there. Yeah.
How was that trip? Good to get away?
Oh, it was amazing. They had a big swell come in from the storms that have been going around.
Yeah.
And I was able to get out on the surfboard and enjoy some of the 7-foot, 8-foot waves. And then did a lot of fishing, too, just to relax and hang out with family.
That's awesome. Obviously, your background, plenty of surfing involved in that. But how do you go out there? 7-foot, 8-foot waves. It's pretty big.
Yeah, I had to muster up a board, be creative and try to get one. They weren't renting out any surfboards because it was pretty intimidating.
Yeah.
And so I actually asked the lady. I said, okay, well, can I give you my driver's license and you lend me a board and I'll be back by 7.
Oh my God.
And it was a lot of fun. She was amazing.
That's incredible. Yeah. Next thing we're going to see Alev on Instagram or something riding a coffee table like Kelly Slater did a couple of years ago.
Oh my gosh. No way. Oh, Kelly Slater's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And making coffee tables would be pretty fun too.
That would be hilarious. Well, tying two of your passions in together, which we're definitely going to talk about a little bit later. But first of all, I just want to say thanks so much for jumping on the podcast. Obviously, we've been back and forth over the last couple of weeks. Now you've been super busy with things ramping back up again with the Sevens. But I'm not sure if you've jumped on any of the podcasts previously, but basically what we do here is just have players on individually, highlight their background, their pathway into professional rugby, and sort of just get to share their experiences along the way. So, yeah, again, appreciate you coming on.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for having me, and I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. So why don't we just start with I'll hand over to you. You can do a quick introduction and maybe just give us a quick overview of your upbringing, pathway into rugby. I know there's so much to go into, and I'll have some very specific questions as we go along. But just give us a quick overview in terms of, you know, your pathway and how you got into USA rugby.
Absolutely. My name is Layla Alev Kelter. I actually go by my middle name, which is Alev. My mom's side of the family is Turkish, and so our names are Turkish, and she's also a Layla, so it's easier if the phone rings. You know, is Layla there? This is she. Oh, which one? So I go by my middle name, which actually means flame, and there's a cool story behind that. I have a twin sister who's also a blonde, and I'm a redhead, and so her name means water and my name means fire. So we are quite opposite, but we love each other and she's my best friend. We all grew up in Alaska and had an amazing time just, I guess, playing around in the woods and creating healthy competition between each other. I have two brothers as well, four of us. Just had an amazing time in Alaska. Yeah. From there, we played a lot of sports, about 6, I think, to count. Involved tennis, soccer, swimming, basketball. I think ice hockey. I don't know if I said that, but a lot of different sports. And just got picked up to play Division One ice hockey and soccer from at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I was entering as one of the number one recruits, and played 5 years of Division One sports. Got a degree in art and fine arts with an emphasis in sculpture, and then found rugby after college. And it's the best thing that's ever happened to me, and I'm excited to talk about that.
And we are extremely grateful that rugby found you, because obviously everything you've done in the sport since then has been ridiculous, to say the least. Before we jump into the rugby, I definitely want to touch on the hockey and the soccer, because I think so much of your playing style and your skill sets definitely translated from those sports previously. But obviously, your background representing the USA in both soccer and hockey at U20s level, like that must have been a pretty amazing experience.
Yeah, just it's really a blessing, to be honest, and just so excited to have had the opportunity as a youngster since I was 14 to train and prepare for those international competitions. And yes, it was definitely amazing to say the least.
And then, were there any aspirations, obviously, for you to try and go professional in either of those sports at the time? Did you have any interest, or was there any interest to get you to stay in those sports?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm thinking about it now, and yes, there was every intention of making, I think in my mind as an 18, 19-year-old, that I would play hockey first. And typically you can get picked up for the full national team at a younger age, and so that's why hockey first. And then I had a dream to, and it was lofty, and I knew that was kind of hard to reach, but then to turn around and play in the Soccer Olympics was actually kind of what I anticipated and was striving for. But I was a little derailed. I didn't make the hockey national team. I was probably one of the third or last cut from the Sochi Olympics in 2014, and that was it's quite devastating. So, but the opportunity to play as a youth team member was so great.
Were there any teammates at the youth level that have gone on now at the national level, at either hockey or soccer?
Yes, Brianna Decker, Hillary Knight, and Erica Lawler,
Yeah,
those
wow.
are all, I mean, there's a lot of players that I played with that on the soccer side. Rose Lavelle, we played Wisconsin together. Christy Mewis, we were in the same ODP program. And Casey Short, some other big names there. But yeah, it was a really amazing year for our program, and a lot of girls are playing on the full national team now.
Yeah, that's crazy. I just want to touch on the family stuff just a little bit. There must have been some pretty crazy sibling rivalry growing up as well, with everything that you've talked about.
Yes, my oldest brother played football and baseball, and he actually played both at the Air Force Academy. And he would be out there throwing fastballs down to second base. He was a catcher, so we would be catching his second base throws. And then if we weren't being his second baseman, we were being his tackle dummy for football. And it was a lot of fun, and I think that helps with not only the rugged side of Alaska, but also the toughness with my brother and our family. We kind of just, if we had an issue, we just figured it out, as my mom would say, you guys figure it out. And sometimes that took a little bit of physical
I love that.
things. But no, we my twin and I are, she's my best friend and my biggest competitor. But we would always be, how many soccer juggles can we have? How many, top shelf crossbars for hockey could we do? And I remember we got in trouble because we started to hit the hockey pucks along the garage door. We just liked the way it sounded, and we actually had a competition to see who could make the biggest dent. And well, my mom came home and we had a good talking to, but yeah, that was the last time we did that. But it's just like little things like that that helped with just trying to make us better players.
100%. And it honestly sounds like, without you even knowing, you're getting primed to turn into the rugby player that you have become to be, just from all these activities and other sports that have translated into your skill set.
Absolutely.
So tell us then, like, the story of you coming into rugby for the first time. Like, did you know much about the sport? Like, how did that come about?
Yeah, I had been talked or just told about like told a lot of amazing stories about rugby in college. My best friend Annie Brownlee from Alaska, she went to St. Olaf, and I guess they had an amazing women's club team, and she would come home and just rave about rugby and how Lev, oh my gosh, you should play it, you should do these things that under the at the time I was under contract with UW soccer and hockey. So from what I had heard, it was a, you know, kind of a, you know, a crazy sport where there could be a lot of room for injury. And you know, I think I have a differing view now, but I wasn't able to try it in college. And after college, I kind of was able to have an amazing opportunity to try to rugby for the first time at the Olympic Training Center in Chula Vista. And yeah, I mean, it was playing boys hockey. I always kind of put a shoulder, knew how to put a shoulder in someone, but you don't have to wrap and roll, you know, in hockey. So took a little bit of a learning curve, but yeah, I fell in love with it right away.
So your first experience was literally going down to OTCs and jumping in head first with essentially the best of the best.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was, that's what happened. And it's kind of crazy to think about it now, but it was the time where crossover athletes were huge.
Yeah.
And they, you know, were looking for good athletes that helped to transition to rugby, and that they would just hope that they could pick up the sport quickly. And I remember playing Canada in my first game at the training center during a friendly. And I think the first three tackles were high, and I almost got a yellow card. So it was just a steep learning curve, but there was a lot of expectation because I was, again, with the best, and they were so selfless in sharing knowledge. And I think that's what I fell in love about rugby. And it was how willing these women were to teach me the game and to give every ounce of themselves to help.
Who were some of those girls that helped out initially in sort of just like getting your understanding of the game and mentoring you?
Oh, yes. So many. I can think of Jillian Potter, Shayna Turley, Victoria Falayan, Kelly Griffin, Christy Ringingberg. Those are just to name a few, but yeah, big heavy hitters.
What was one of the, like the biggest eye-opening transitions for you coming into the sport that you probably didn't know initially?
Well, that the rules are called laws.
Yeah.
And learned that pretty quickly. And then, I had to, again, the, you know, high tackles and kind of the back 10 rule. I think they tapped the ball and I ran and hit the girl again and got a yellow card. So there's a lot of that. And then also, you know, how I played scrum half at the beginning. And I think that was a great strategy from Rick Suggett to put me in basically to learn every role. And you were kind of a part of it. You know, you were part of the kicking or part of the line out throws, a lot of, and your passing had to be accurate. So to put me in that position right away where I had to rise, I think was awesome. And that was hard too. Like just the passing, learning how to pass and the tackle technique. Yes.
I mean, anyone coming into the sport would agree with you 100% on all those things. And some people after 10 years of playing are still trying to figure it out. So you're certainly not alone.
I'm still learning.
Exactly. Okay. So 2014, you've just jumped into rugby for the first time. Did you look that far ahead in terms of aspirations and goals to stay in rugby and what was ahead of you? Obviously, 2 years down the line, Rio Olympics were a massive deal for women's rugby in the US, but were you sort of just taking it game by game or had those goals and that was the reason for staying in the sport?
Yeah, I think so. I think day by day was where I was at because in the recent like kind of life happenings, I guess, where, you know, I just was released from the Olympic hockey team and I was trying to figure out what my next, you know, purpose was and where I was going to play either professional sports in soccer or ice hockey. And then rugby kind of came in the picture. And for me, I fell in love with it right away. And the people were amazing. And the ethos of the game, the integrity, the respect, all of it was so attractive at the time. And it's still my favorite part about rugby is the community. And I wanted to surround myself with amazing and strong women. And I don't think I had aspirations of the Olympics. I was just a newbie and just learning the rules, the laws. And there must have been an excitement that rugby was getting on the map at the time and that the things I was doing were very, you know, for me, they were just fun. And I definitely had a view of the Olympics, but not, I don't think it was on my radar as far as making it. It was very apparent in everything we were doing because I was at the training center while I was learning the game. And so we talked about the Olympics, we talked about mindfulness and staying present and things like that. But yeah, it was definitely as I started to get the game and the learning curve kind of flattened out where I was starting to compete. That's when I started to think, oh man, there is a shot. This would be pretty rad.
Yeah, that's huge. Was there, and again, just going back to that, like living in that part of the world in San Diego, Southern California is not a bad little trade-off as well, just to balance the lifestyle out.
Sorry, say that again.
Just living down in California at OTCs as well is not a bad little trade-off.
Oh my gosh. No, it's as well. Yeah, coming from Wisconsin and before that, Alaska, it was a, you know, having summer 24/7 was amazing. And it truly is a dream come true. I get to run around in a shorts and t-shirt for a living. And the hardest thing I have to do is put sunscreen on every day. So it's not shabby.
That's so good. So did the women's and men's have much cohesion or crossover at OTCs leading up to the Olympics?
Yes, a lot. A lot of crossover. I know that the coaching staff was changing for us quite a lot. And it created a lot of separation between even just ourselves. So we did have a lot of friends on the men's team. And if it wasn't, we never crossed over like practices wise, but we, you know, eat lunch and in the same area all the time. And there was some separate values and core team beliefs. But for the most part, it's just, you know, we're the United States and we're training for, you know, something bigger than ourselves and a lot of support there on both sides.
Yeah. Speaking to Perry Baker about this a couple of weeks ago as well, I mean, just representing the US at any sport in the Olympics is such a big deal. So that must have been an incredible experience. And then off the back of that, to score the first try at the Olympics, what an experience.
Yeah, no, that was pretty awesome. I think I was interviewed afterwards and they said, oh, how does it feel to be the first American to score a try? And that, for me, I was like, wait, that happened? Like, I didn't know that was a statistic. But, you know, it's crazy because everything we were doing was history. And we are pioneering the sport in America, especially. And so it's really cool to be in that position and have that platform.
Completely. And then, again, just coming away from the Olympics, results not ideal and certainly gave you all pretty big focus and aspirations for this next time around. Sucks that didn't happen this year, but again, we'll touch on that later. But there was thoughts of transitioning into the 15s, or that was something that was presented to you the following year for the World Cup?
There were thoughts of it already. I had been asked before the Olympics, you know, if, you know, there's a chance that I would like to play 15s, and I knew that there was a World Cup coming up. And for me, just any rugby at the time was what I needed. I needed experience and was trying very hard to learn 15s. I was just, I think after 2 years figuring out sevens, and it's kind of did things ass backwards. Usually people play 15s and then specialize in sevens. And for me, I just went straight to sevens, specialized it. And then, you know, there was an opportunity to open up, you know, the 15s game and try that. And I said, why not? And I fell in love with it right away. It's so different than sevens, but it's a lot more strategic and a lot more contact, which I love. And yeah, just, you have to think way ahead in 15s.
Yeah. Who were some of the mentors in the 15s program again, that guided you along the way?
Tiffany Faye, or I'm saying her name wrong, forgive me, but she was our captain and she was an amazing leader. Chetta Emba's on our sevens team. She was our backs captain. There's Kate Zachary, Sarah Parsons. Again, Jill Potter was next to me playing out there. Sylvia Broughton, she was my 13, and it's just been an amazing time with those women, but they were crucial in helping me learn the game and pushing me at the World Cup.
Do you think that there's more of a chance for a crossover between the sevens and the 15s in the women's game? And do you think that'll continue to happen more with players as they develop?
I do think there is a great chance to cross over. And I think if you can, you know, if the seasons are different and you stay with you know, communication between the coaching staff that it's possible. And I do think that we are looking at a lot of our sevens players are looking at taking their hand, you know, next year and in the World Cup. And I see a lot of the other teams like New Zealand and Australia getting, you know, games played at 15s. So it's definitely a thought for all of us that the 15s game is so fun to play and also represented well around the world. And if we can make it, you know, more seen for the women's side, then it's going to be extremely successful going forward.
Yeah, and just touching on that, like the way things have turned out this year, 2021 is an absolutely massive year for women's rugby in US now with the Olympics and World Cup basically back to back. So I'm sure you've got aspirations to be competing at both those tournaments. But before we touch on that, I'll have to give you a little shout out because your 2019-2020 season was pretty ridiculous statistically. looking over at the numbers now, obviously top three try scorers for the year, top point scorer, top five conversions. And I mean, that's just to name a handful of them. So like, what do you put that down to? Did you feel like you were having a good year compared to others, or this is just going about business for you?
Yeah, no, I think there is, you know, ideas of numbers in the background for me, but it really is just figuring out what the team needs and following through. And we had, you know, I guess two returners from the Olympics and the rest is a pretty, you know, new squad. And we've had a lot of players that are in the in and out of the program. And I contribute and attribute that success to having Chris Brown and Emily Bidewell lead this program and turn it around. And it's been unbelievable to have, you know, our contracts be in a better spot and also the, you know, the turnaround being not as, you know, I guess every 3 months or 4 months there were new people coming into the program. And so to have it more consistent, has been amazing. And we've really worked on our culture and buying in and trusting each other. And so I think those numbers are very evident to the team leading a brave culture and following our values and really holding ourselves to higher standards.
100%. And again, just going back to you on a personal note, seeing here, you literally have not missed one tournament since your debut in the HSBC Sevens tournament. So how do you look after your body? Because every rugby player on the planet is like, please help.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think I could do more actually in that. I feel pretty old now, but just young rugby wise. But no, it's really a testament to our athletics, you know, our athletic trainers and our support staff, our coaches and our med staff here at the training center. They're the world class. And, you know, we do a lot of recovery as a team and ice baths and the Normatec compression gear, everything you can think of, we have it. And it's amazing to use and you see results.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, just creating that consistency in the culture and just having players like you that have been there from day one. Just help with that process so much. Chris Brown, head coach, everyone has got amazing things to say about this guy. And obviously he's doing a great job with the team, but what's he like from a player's perspective, like day-to-day stuff, the relationship he's got with the players?
Yeah, no, he's got a great rapport with the team. And I think that started, you know, as he was crossing over before he became our full-time head coach, you know, he was always checking in on us. Like I said, like he was the assistant men's coach at the time under Mike Friday. And, you know, he would come over and help us out with skills when Richie was our coach and didn't have full staff with him. So it's been, we already created a relationship with him prior, and he was always holding us to a higher standard. And then when he became our head coach, I mean, that just, we really wanted to show him that what he was showing us, it was working, and that we really had a responsibility and accountability towards, you know, proving to ourselves that we can do it, that, you know, with the right direction and right culture and right buy-in, that we can you know, be world champions. And we just needed to bring that every day. And he's a very detail-oriented individual, and where some of us like myself are very like relationship driven and not necessarily statistics like an analysis. And he's very into you know, how are we progressing and what are things that we can tangibly see and, you know, our passing completion. And like, that's, that detail was, is what's going to separate us from the, you know, the, say the Kiwis or the Aussies. So, it's great to have that around.
Yeah. And again, that's, it feels like that's straight out of Mike Friday's book as well, in terms of just that detail and,
yes,
and purpose around the game analytics. But, what's again, we've touched on the rapport, but like, is he confrontational as a coach? Is he player centric? Like, does he allow much buy-in from the team in terms of what you guys are doing out there?
I think at the beginning it was extremely critical that he, you know, took his relationships and built it on success and what that means to him, and then completing those, you know, what he was asking of us. So having it very task oriented at the beginning, and now it's where he was driving a lot of the, you know, intentions and driving a lot of the, you know, setting the standards. And now it's transitioned where, you know, we know what's expected, and now it's the player's accountability. And so he is very personal, and there's always an open door policy in anything we have or want to talk to. He's so open and very honest. And I think that transparency has changed the program, saying why, you know, you didn't make tour, giving you, you know, players that opportunities to show that they matter, you know, a lot of one-on-one time and individual player planning, all of it. It seems to have an amazing staff like Matt Long, our sports, our, I guess, our, what do you call it? Our strength and conditioning coach. Yeah. And, you know, he's helped out tremendously. And especially Brownie just had his third girl last week. And so Matt's picked up and, you know, and has been amazing. So
talking on detail, Lev, I'm not going to go out on a limb here, because I know there's a bunch of people that would agree with me as well, but you've probably got the best drop kick in world rugby at the moment. What's the detail behind that?
Oh, I think I was in, it was my second tournament. I had gone to Guangzhou, China as my first tournament. And then the second tournament, we took a Falcons team to Fiji. And I remember Serevi, it was under Serevi, and he ended up coming and just running around with us at our practice. And I was kicking the ball in the air from just, you know, letting it drop on my foot and bouncing back up, letting it drop, bouncing back up. But, you know, it was kind of coming up all wonky.
Yeah.
And he came over to me and said, okay, your drop is the most important. How you drop it out of your hands is the most important. And then he just proceeded to do 20 drop kicks on his foot straight back to his hands. No wobble, nothing. And I was like,
probably
wow.
Not even looking at the ball.
No, no. I mean, he's probably thinking, you know what I mean? Like closing his eyes.
Yeah.
He's that good. And I thought I saw the focus that he had in his release of his hands. And then he said, if you drop it on your foot and it comes off weird, that doesn't count. And to me, I was like, well, all my kicks before that, I didn't care if it came wonky up to me, you know, my hands. And then from that moment, I realized that the drop and how it came back to my foot, or the drop, how it comes back off the ground, is so important. And that's where that kind of detail began. And then it went from, you know, the drop to the plant foot, perfecting the plant foot, getting it in the same position, having, you know, a marker every time I'd kicked, was it the same width away from my drop, and playing with, you know, the swing and the follow through and your head down. And it's, it is a very detailed process. And, then it, you do it so many times that it becomes memory. And, that to me is, just a part maybe of wanting to take the soccer skill that I've had.
Yeah.
And, you know, and really, all those years of learning how to hit different passes with the football and outside of the foot, curving it in, you know, different weighted passes, and just really bringing that curiosity to rugby and this new ball.
I think that's so important though, because the accuracy in which you have with the variety in your kicks is, again, best in the world. So I feel like Rugby Bricks should be over here in the US doing video analysis with you, or maybe that's something that you could do down the line.
Let's
as well.
Let's do it. Let's get them. I'd love for them to come over here.
Yeah, 100%. And again, it goes back to like the hockey and the soccer that you grew up with. It's just so obvious to see it in your game and how it's just attributed to your skill set. So that's been massive. On the circuit, where have been like some of the favorite locations or destinations that you've traveled to?
Some of my favorite destinations that I've traveled to on the circuit. One big shout out to HSBC, though, for giving us opportunities to travel around the world. They've been phenomenal.
Well done with that one.
Yes, absolutely. And I know we went from 5 tournaments to 8 tournaments and we're growing. So I know that COVID will probably stump that a little, but hopefully not too dramatically.
Fingers crossed.
Absolutely. But I think South Africa was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, adding Hamilton was unbelievable. But Sydney and Dubai are definitely my favorites. And I think Sydney, because just everyone loves rugby there, and it's always packed stadium. And then Dubai, you come across, like, you know, the world's you know, craziest infrastructure, to then driving, you know, 20 minutes in the desert to this pop-up wonderful stadium, and that just having the atmosphere be, you know, so energetic and exciting is always fun to play in.
Had you done much traveling prior to being on the circuit, or this was all pretty new to you?
Our family, you know, we were military, so we grew up traveling a lot around the States, and living in different places. And that's something that was really important to us, was international travel and getting to see the world and experiencing different cultures and respecting, a lot of folks that way. And, but this was a way, it's, you know, extremely expensive, and we're just so blessed that we get to do it, as one of our jobs. And it's, truly an amazing experience. I'll have this as definitely number one.
There you go.
In my books of life goals and life events.
And do you get much time off while you're touring to go and see, like, cultural sites, or just travel around the destinations that you're at away from rugby?
We've made an effort to really
Who's leading, you know, that in the team?
I would say our captains, and we have a social group that helps lead different activities, but we have a day off where it should be, like, you know, non-impact, like, really rest yourselves. But that's a time to do something as a team, you know, whether we get out and see, and we have a lot of coffee lovers on our team. And so there's so many opportunities to, you know, see the new hip coffee shops and try some different coffee, different brews. But there's also opportunities to go to museums and see the culture. But I wish there was more days off, and that we'd stayed longer, but, you know, we're there for business. And but, you know, it's still amazing to be immersed in it, and you know, at the hotels and getting to walk around. So
100%. And I have to know, like, are there any little like touring roles and responsibilities between squad members, or maybe little details within the squad that you guys are keeping each other accountable to?
We have a lot of, you know, I guess what we call it is just like duty groups that help with just logistics and making sure everyone's pulling their weight. But we have, like a social committee, and they help with, you know, just us having fun as a team, organically just getting to know each other. And then, and it's volunteer based, but we have a lot of, like, you know, our captains are amazing at delegating, whether someone's picking the outfits for the day, or, you know, what we're doing as a team and how we're staying united, to laundry groups, you know. And so it's Abby and Chris are our captains right now, and they have a lot of support behind them. And it's not something that we have to pull teeth with, you know, here. We want to do it, and we believe it's important. So, yeah.
Sure. And obviously, don't tell me if you don't want to, but are there any fun finds that happen along the way if people aren't pulling their weight?
We don't have fines quite yet. I know that'll be introduced probably a little later. We definitely have this. We have a dice that we roll, and there's some disciplining, you know, opportunities on the dice. And there's also some fun, like, you know, you can get out of it, you know, kind of things on the dice as well. And that changes every year. And I'm hoping that we can keep it and implement it. We just kind of introduced it not too long ago. So
can you share a number? Are you allowed to do that?
I don't remember all the numbers right now. We haven't brought it up because haven't been together in a while. So, yeah. But I think like 4 or something would be like a bear crawl, the full field.
Wow.
And then some, you know, like broken Broncos in there, and then some other cleaning duties, and then some other things.
These are productive. You're actually making yourselves better from these fines.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like the team is pretty reliable in a sense of, like, you know, we don't need to be hindering ourselves.
Sure.
But
how refreshing. A lot of other rugby teams should take note on this stuff.
Well, I mean, there's some we probably shouldn't share,
fair,
but, you know.
Fair. So, again, on tour, obviously you've been to a lot of tournaments over the years, but there must be some big rivals or opponents that you look forward to each time you go out the field against them.
Yeah, I think the first that comes to mind is the Kiwis. They're just world-class all around and world-class people. And, you know, they're never going to give up. They have such a strong bench that even if you do get up three or four tries at the beginning, you know, you have to fight for each one. And, you know, they have such a presence of cohesion, and they're, you know, a very great example for up and coming teams and teams like ourselves who are in the top three that, you know, what gold medal standards look like. And it's, you know, if you weren't thinking about what are they doing successfully, then I don't know if you're asking the right questions, sure. You know? And so we have to look at that. And then also the Canadians and the Australians, they have a great individual athletes. Jez Landry, someone that is just has been around and is so consistent and so cheeky with, you know,
great chip kicks.
Yeah, chip kicks and, you know, just her running and playmaking is unbelievable. Charlotte Kaslick is just class as well and learning, you know, her running lines and support lines and passing and getting the ball back. And then you have, you know, Elia Green and Portia Woodman, who are just strong finishers and really hard people to tackle. And, you know, you're kind of your worst nightmare if they're coming at you. So, but yeah, it's there's a place for everyone, which is why rugby is so awesome.
100%. And again, that's why we all love it. But I got to know, like, there must be a player or that one-on-one opportunity that you see that person in front of you and you're just like, here we go. Who's that?
I mean, as far as like someone that is just amazing, like you're just like, wow, mad respect, or someone that you're just like, you know, I think Heather Fisher is someone that if I saw her coming at me, I would be like, oh, thinking twice about how high I go, you know, I really got to get low. And, you know, and, you know, Niall Williams is another, player that's amazing. And one of my best friends out there and she's, you know, her and going through contact and offloading is so dangerous. And then, you know, Kelly Brazier's step, you know, there's a long list of very talented players that we play against. And, you know, it always makes you want to go home and work on, you know, yourself.
Who would you say is the most vocal team out on the pitch in terms of just like spraying the opposition or just giving banter back and forth while the game's going on?
Yeah, I'd say like physically Canada gives a lot. The France are really chippy as far as physical. And, you know, in the breakdown, you just never want to get caught not supporting well in a breakdown and they'll punish you. But, you know, the Kiwis are pretty vocal. They are vocal with themselves, they're vocal with the ref, you know, really telling them, okay, that was...
What a cliche.
Yeah, that was acceptable, not acceptable. You know, and it's oftentimes pretty, you know, just to kind of be seen, you know, be heard. And I guess with, you know, ourselves, we're pretty vocal with each other. We're very quick to let each other know what we expect and pump each other up. So the key is to stay positive. You know that. So
yeah, 100%. And yeah, we've all been in those situations where a teammate loses their head and trying to get them back into the blue after they've just lost it is a challenge in itself. So that's funny to hear that the New Zealand team is probably the most vocal standard. Has to be. Hey, you mentioned earlier that Sydney was one of your favorite places to tour just because of the culture and obviously coffee's a big love of yours. How does this come about? Why coffee? When did it start? I need to know all the answers because you're also talking to a huge coffee connoisseur.
That's awesome. You know, in coffee kind of began, we had a coffee tasting as a team and just a couple of the girls brought in bags and beans and we tried different roasts and we tried to do it blindly. So we were all trying to, you know, label which one was the Colombian, which one was the Kenyan and so on. And it was hilarious. And that ended up being a tradition to basically coffee club and having, you know, just be a team activity where we can just relax. And when you're drinking a cup of coffee with someone, you're always kind of, I think, you know, spreading your roots and investing in them and having an awesome conversation. And so I like that idea of sharing conversation, storytelling over a cup of coffee. and what that brings to that person. And it really sends a message that, you know, this individual is important and this person matters. And, you know, I'd love to share a coffee with you. I'd love to, you know, give my two cents, or I'd love to hear some critical feedback. You know, it's all can happen over a cup of coffee. And that's what I love about it being so versatile.
And you're, again, bringing your beans and brewing a coffee on tour everywhere you go as well?
Yeah, no, Abby's my roommate on tour, and we're always making coffee for each other, with each other. And Nicole Haverland and Chetta Emba, we all, sometimes when we're not roommates together and we're early risers and our roommates are still sleeping, we'll go out in the hallway and we'll still bring our scales out and our hot water and kettles and, yeah, make it a thing. And it's just a moment for us to reconnect and share something that we love.
So again, just thinking out loud here, but based on your worldly experience and being to all these amazing places around the world, surely there's a traveling coffee club book coming out with Alev's go-to spots around the world.
Absolutely. And then one is actually in Coogee Beach, and it's called The Dive. And you know,
I used to live right around the corner.
Yes. And so it happened to be the lucky coffee shop across the hotel from where we were, but every day I see, you know, teams, you know, at their respective times, like flowing through the dive, getting their Americanos, or not Americanos, but their, you know,
long blacks
and just, and, you know, really enjoying a good, strong cup of coffee to wake ourselves back up.
So is there a business plan in the future then for you to maybe open a franchise or a couple of coffee shops?
Oh, there's a dream of that. And
there's, you know,
where there's a dream, there's a way, there's a will. And I guess where there's a will, there's a way. So, but no, I definitely think that having a coffee business would be amazing. Whether it's, you know, investing in some local farming in Encinitas up, you know, up north from here, or, you know, having some, you know, family, you know, friends, you know, across the world. But, you know, sourcing locally, giving back to communities and farms that need it, and also that are just doing things correctly and having the same values as me. But I recently bought a roaster. There's a gentleman out of Taiwan, Mr. Lee. He was a factory worker and then retired and is making roasters now. And it's called the Huki, and basically just wired, transferred money to this guy in Taiwan 3 days later, like praying it get here, and showed up on my doorstep. So putting it together this weekend. And
that's incredible.
Yeah. So I'm pretty pumped. And it's like the next step into, I guess, these COVID chronicles of trying new things and learning and falling in love with things and passions that maybe I wouldn't do if this hadn't happened. So there's always a positive. But yeah, I'm excited about starting the roasting.
How on earth did you find Mr. Lee?
Oh my gosh. So my friend Shelby is an amazing roaster at Huckleberry and is world renowned in roasting. And she actually took our team in the Glendale series, and we made a team blend, and we called it the Brave Blend. And those are an acronym for our values as a team. And we all like learned the process of roasting, of heating, of, you know, the cracking and all the temperatures it takes to roast a great cup of coffee. And then we bagged it ourselves and had that for our Glendale series, which we ended up winning. It was amazing. So there's somewhat of a chemistry there, but Shelby is, she recommended this gentleman in Taiwan, and I kind of just had to trust and buy in. And yeah, no, I'm excited to start that that process. But what a unique experience, not knowing.
Oh, completely. it's incredible. And hopefully off the back of this, that we get a little bit of exposure to Mr. Lee, maybe, and he blows up over in Taiwan somewhere.
Yeah, it would be pretty cool. I know that we could potentially do a video and share that with him, but also just even getting to meet him would be pretty awesome. He's so talented, and his fabrication and detail is something as an artist I really respect.
So I need top three favorite cafes, just top to bottom, aesthetic, best coffee, like all of that stuff, anywhere in the world.
Okay.
Can you name them?
Yeah, I can. Give me a second. I definitely want to say the Dive in Coogee. There was a place in Biarritz that our team loved. I can't remember the name of it. I don't remember.
They're just ripping espressos.
Yes. Surely. Yeah. It was pretty great. And then, I'd say Bird Rock Cafe is huge in San Diego, Dark Horse, and in Denver, I'd say Huckleberry. I know Coda Coffee does a lot of stuff there. Trying to think of other places. Let's see. Yeah, Lightning Brothers in Hamilton.
Yep.
Lightning Bros. That was big. I ended up getting a to-go mug there, and I'm always reminded of that, the good times there. But yeah, there's going to be a
It's a
book,
good
and there's going to be
list.
a long list, and I have to sit down and really think about the names of these places. I feel like it's the memories inside these places, and the people that you meet that you really remember. So
100%. And there's definitely a book here. I know
we'll
there
see.
is. I mean, every rugby player you speak to, doesn't matter where they're from, always says that they have dreams and aspirations to open a cafe, or there's always a passion for coffee just around that coffee club culture. But
Yeah.
it feels like you're like taking this to another level and already so far ahead in terms of just knowing how to deliver it. So let's make it happen.
Okay, thank you for the encouragement. Yeah, loving it.
Yeah, why not? So you mentioned COVID sort of learnings over the last couple of months. Mentioned as well that you've taken on some family members per se over COVID.
Yeah,
Gonna
no.
jump into that.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. No, I think you're referring to, I have four chickens,
Yeah.
beautiful hens that lay some eggs every day. And I had our manager, Liz Strohecker, was watching my chickens for the majority of their younger life, and I guess well, she was helping me because my house that I had to move into wasn't going to allow chickens, and definitely not any pets. So she watched the chickens in a big
To
family
be there
privilege.
for that conversation would be hilarious.
Yeah, they're like, "Do you have any small pets under the size of 20 pounds or less?" And I'm like, "No, I've got four chickens." But no, so yeah, so I ended up really wanting to I moved to a different place, and I was like, I would love to get those girls back. And I built this beautiful chicken coop, and it took about 2 weeks. And so my teammates came over and helped out. But it was, obviously socially distant. Making a coop is pretty challenging and a lot of fun. But yeah, I added four new hens to the family, and they are amazing. And fresh eggs are always wonderful to have.
I was about to say, you're probably the most self-sufficient rugby player going around at the moment with your coffee beans and your eggs every morning.
I feel like that's all you need,
And I,
maybe
what else
some
do you need?
spinach or kale or some sort of, green in there, but
You can grow that too.
we'll
Use the
see.
chicken fertilizer. Who knows?
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. The girls are pretty self-sufficient, so it's not a lot of work, and they give a great return.
Nice, absolutely. So we're going to wrap things up here in a minute, but obviously want to touch on rugby stuff in terms of what's coming up for you over the next couple
Sure.
of months and 2021 as a massive year now that everything's sort of been pushed back. But where are things at the moment in terms of the Women's Sevens program? You just mentioned earlier that back to 10. So
Yeah,
how's that all going?
we are we're a resilient bunch. I think
Yeah.
that's good to it's good to be aware of, and it's good to also keep working on it. But as far as being flexible and adaptable to the times, I think that's the new norm, and we are going to just keep things positive and move towards whatever we can do. And we've been in a bubble, a training bubble, for the last 4 weeks with seven people, three groups of seven. Now we just got retested to join two groups of 10. And the hope is that in the next training block, another 4 weeks, we'll be all together training. And we're going to introduce contact in a safe, environment again, and just kind of get back to the basics. But throughout this whole time, we've just been, hearing about different, tournaments being canceled, and really just trying to stay present and think about what we can control. And again, staying positive and being aware of, things that might take us down as a team, but this is a time to really, mentally get strong and cohesive as a unit, and we're just taking it one day at a time.
How challenging has that bubble environment been, just being so isolated from everything else?
I mean, it's really hard to control people, right? So,
Yeah.
and you are a part of this team and you have this team first mentality, but you also, you know, want and desire your autonomy. And it's extremely hard sometimes to, you know, want to go out and be with different people. And, you know, for me, it's being such a personal, you know, I guess being able to like hug you or high five you
sure.
is really important to me. And so it's hard to not have that connection with some folks, but learning different ways you can connect and using technology and our platforms that are presented to us and not being afraid to learn something new and to try something new and to, you know, even if it's getting to know people inside your bubble that are new, you know, it's really a forced activity for us to really invest in each other and be curious and to have those hard conversations and also just new conversations around, you know, there are a lot of things that are causing people to struggle right now. What are those things? How can we help each other and really create a sense of trust that way?
And knowing your personality, I feel like no one better for that, just leaning into that role as a senior player, but also just, again, your character and your personality around the squad. I'm sure your teammates are appreciating that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's fun. I really can't do it without them, though. I mean, I was going crazy just being here alone. And, you know, I had my girlfriend around, but she, you know, we had to create a works environment for the shed. And it's just nice to have our, you know, our spaces when we're both doing Zoom calls and, you know, and it's like, even just with one person, I'm sure she's so patient with me and I'm so thankful and blessed to have her.
I mean,
you know, we're doing different workouts, you know, and teaching each other the things that, you know, we could all grow better on. So it's been awesome.
Yeah, massive. Hey, I got to know, has Brownie sort of like touched on the Olympics for next year? And is there like any sort of detail or mapping towards your scheduling for that? Or it's sort of just like lay the landscape, planning it 4 week blocks at a time?
No, I mean, we've definitely thought about, you know, obviously it's still on and as we know of, and so you're going to train. And even if it was off, I think we'd still train just as hard and really focus on, you know, not only are we thinking about the outcome, which is the Olympics, but we're really staying present and maximizing what's in front of us. And, you know, Emily Bidwell has really brought into our culture, you know, utilizing the resources that we're given and, you know, and not really, and just being thankful and grateful for the things that we have. And so we know we have a lot and we're extremely thankful. And so we're going to just roll with the punches, but it really is, there are plan A, plan Bs and plan Cs. And as things get canceled or we're hoping that things get added, you know, towards the end. So I think we're in plan C phase as of now, which is really, month by month. And, you know, the staff is really thinking about long-term and how we can be most prepared. And the team is really focusing on what's in front of us and, you know, and trusting that we'll be taken care of.
On the team dynamic at the moment, give me a name of like a rising star or talent that you think is just going to explode onto the scene over the next couple of months.
I mean, you also saw like HSBC just, you know, crowned Christy Kerr.
Yes, Christy. Yeah.
As a Dream Team member. So that's one, you know, one of seven best players in the world and right now currently. And so, and I think it was her inaugural year. So this has been tremendous to see her. She just crushed the Bronco, ran a 4:55. Last week or yesterday actually. And it's just, she's going to be a tremendous threat and, you know, a lot of power and pace behind her. And is just an amazing teammate, you know, really curious about people, very detail oriented as well. And then, you know, Steph Roavetti has been someone that's gotten a hand a couple times on the circuit, but, you know, she's just a class woman and we're excited to have her on the, you know, around as well. I'm trying to think of Nia Oliver. She's, I think, 18 years old right now, and it's just so powerful and such a threat with a...
That's incredible.
A sidestep. So I think that you're going to see, you know, as the circuit hopefully continues, these new faces, and but you'll see them around for a while and excited to play next to them, yeah.
Yeah, that's huge. And again, everyone that's been paying attention, so excited to see everyone back out on the pitch. As soon as possible. So
yes.
Fingers crossed we can make that happen. Alev, I have to say it's been an absolute pleasure and such a treat to finally catch up and meet you and have this conversation. There's so many different sides of your pathway and your experiences that we could talk on hours and hours here. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Extremely grateful that you had me, and Yeah, I'm very excited we connected.
Yeah, of course. And as a coffee connoisseur, if you're ever on the East Coast as well, let me know. I've got plenty of spots over here up in New
Awesome.
York, tri-state area for you to check out
Thank
as
you.
well.
Yeah, definitely. Let's get on a text and swap some of those shops. Thank you.
Definitely. All right. Have a great day.
You too.
Take
Take
care.
care.
Bye.